shit show. It's a fucking shit show.
Welcome back to Shit Show. Saturday Sitzel, Saturday Fox. How's it going? So today you are going to get to hear a portion of our meeting from this past Thursday. And when I went in to edit this, my audio quality when I was reading in the beginning and during my share was shit. So I'm going to do that portion now. But first, if you're wondering, how do these meetings go? We started off with a minute of silence. I then pull a card, like I have a few different Oracle decks, like Gabby Bernstein's Oracle decks, and I pick one of those. I then ask if somebody has something that they need to share. So if you're really struggling or there's something pressing or you want to share a win. And then after that, I read the reading. I post what the reading's going to be at least an hour before our group. I would say every meeting, at least one person cries. That could be tears of joy or it could be, you know, sad tears. We definitely have lots of laughs. And we also got the chat going on. So we got the person who's sharing, and then you got everybody in the chat commenting on how they can relate to this and that. So the chat is where it's at. And so I want to emphasize that this is not an ACA meeting. I'm not affiliated with the 12-step program ACA. This is not a substitute for ACA. And so how does this differ from an ACA meeting? Well, first of all, we'd get down to business pretty quickly. I was just on an ACA Zoom meeting, and it wasn't until like 25 or 30 minutes in before people started to share. So we don't have all that business stuff in the beginning. And also what I think is really valuable is that we allow crosstalk. And when I say crosstalk, I don't mean people like telling people what they should do. There's none of that going on, but just people commenting on somebody else's share, how they can relate to it. And I find that to be extremely valuable. So then on top of the groups that we have the app. So all day long, shit shows are communicating with each other. It could be somebody who is struggling. It could be somebody asking for advice. It could be someone sharing a win. It could be somebody sharing a resource that they've found, like a book or meditation or whatever. Or it could just be something like funny and silly and stupid that has nothing to do with recovery. So this is where it's at, folks. This is an amazing community with some really cool people. My personality, as I always say, is an acquired taste. And so if you're into me, I think you're pretty cool. So you don't have to worry about showing up and it's just a bunch of fuddy-duddies. The other thing too is that these are people who are really committed to doing the work, right? With this being behind a paywall, I think that that shows that people are, you know, dedicated and willing and want to do this work. So you're missing out. It's time to just do the damn thing. Yes, you, the person that's been listening for a really long time and has been wanting to join for a really long time. I know how many of you are out there because every time someone joins, they tell me that. Actually, I had somebody that recently joined, I can't remember who it was, but they had only been listening to the podcast for 2 weeks before they joined. I'm like, go you. Usually it takes people years to muster up the courage to join this community. But let's just do it, folks. You can quit after 30 days. You can't do this shit alone, okay? You just can't. So damn the join shit show. See the link in the show notes to join. Another thing that you can do that is not scary at all is you can sign up for my email newsletter. So I've had this Substack newsletter for a while. I've been intending to send out weekly emails for the past year and a half, 2 years. And I think I might be finally getting my act together. So you can see the link in the show notes to subscribe to Shit Show Nation. And I'm going to be sharing things in there that I don't share on the podcast. So that could be a baby step for you. Maybe you could first do the newsletter and then work yourself to joining the community. All right, y'all, let's get down to business. And I'm going to read you this reading. This comes from the ACA meditation book, the Strengthening My Recovery. Critical parent. Judging ourselves harshly for mistakes is the critical parent. Big Red Book, page 307. The criticism we heard growing up, whether it was from our parents, teachers, or others, even other children, became so internalized that we learned to let it define us. This wasn't a conscious decision. It's something that happened gradually. As adults, we carry these shaming messages with us in the form of our own personal inner critical parent. This is why we continue to beat ourselves up when we miss the nuance of a situation or make even the smallest error in judgment. These mistakes might be as simple as walking out the door in front of someone and accidentally cutting them off, or maybe we're having a hard time following a conversation. Our critical inner parent jumps right in with, "How could you be so stupid?" or "What's wrong with you?" When we allow this voice to rule our thoughts, we can second guess almost everything we do. As we learn in ACA to silence that critical voice, we replace those messages with more loving thoughts that tell us we haven't done anything wrong. We're okay. If we accidentally cut someone off, we apologize and move on. And we realize that there could be many reasons why we're not following what someone is saying. Maybe they aren't painting a complete picture, so we can ask them to explain or rephrase. Our new responses show strength and they empower us. On this day, I will practice silencing my critical parent and affirm myself that I am human and it is okay to be imperfect. And so for me, I was never verbally abused as a kid. My parents never told me that I was a piece of shit or, you know, dumb or whatever. And so the things that the inner critical parent says to me are not things that my parents said to me. Like, these messages were ingrained in much more subtle ways. What's interesting on that front, though, is that I would say in the past, I don't know, few years, my parents have become verbally abusive to me. But the interesting thing about it is, what's hurtful is the fact that they're trying to hurt me, right? Not the specific things that they're saying to me. I know that the things that they're saying are not true. And so the reading talks about making mistakes. And I think I'm actually pretty good. I guess what you would call a classic mistake or whatever. Like, if I cut somebody off or I'm not following what somebody's saying or I spill something or I forget someone's name or whatever. Generally speaking, I'm very forgiving with myself. There might be rare circumstances where I might, but generally speaking, no. I'm okay with making mistakes. And so in Pete Walker's book, Complex PTSD, From Surviving to Thriving, he talks about how the inner critic can get triggered either through external triggers or internal triggers. So external would be, you know, somebody else doing something to you, doing something when you are in the presence of others. And then we have these internal triggers where we can just spin ourselves into a flashback or have that inner critical parent get really damn loud just by our thoughts alone. You know, like, we don't need anyone to witness. What shows up for me related to my productivity, my procrastination, my self-sabotage, just my inability to adult, my inability to get shit done, like the stuff that has been on my to-do list for forever and ever, or before I sit down to do a certain task, I have this feeling like it's going to be hard. Like, I'm gonna struggle doing this. I'm gonna sit down to do this task and I'm gonna spin my wheels and I'm not gonna get anything done and I'm just gonna waste my time. So that's where the inner critical parent really comes in for me. And the other big messages are like, you'll never have the life that you want. What the hell is wrong with you? Why can't you get your shit together? And it's not like you're stupid or incapable. It's, I know that I'm capable of doing these tasks, of doing these things, But it's like, what the hell is wrong with you that you can't do it when you should be able to do it? Like, I don't know if that makes any sense. So the inner critical parent really shows up related to my productivity and procrastination and my candy crushing. You guys, this candy crush is a really big fucking problem, okay? I'm gonna be vulnerable and honest and, you know, I'm gonna be real, okay? Like, this candy crush shit is a problem. So I blocked, there's an app that I have where I can block games, like game apps. And so last night, I blocked it for 14 hours. So I couldn't play any games for 14 hours. And I'm fucking jonesing, y'all, when I'm like eating my breakfast and drinking coffee. And then it wasn't that long afterwards that I then tried to go and download a different game. Because like the way that the app blocker works is like you select certain particular apps to block. And so I thought, oh, maybe I'll have this workaround. But no, thank God, because it wouldn't open that either. I think it's able to tell that it's a game app and I have it set to like block all game apps. But yeah, like the thought of blocking it for a full 24 hours, like, I don't know if I can do that. And this is ridiculous, folks. We're talking about Candy Crush. What in the hell? And I understand they just design these games so you get sucked in. And I know that they're just fucking with my brain, but it's a problem. And it also it's impacting my spiritual life too. Like my constantly needing to be doing a million things at once on my phone, constantly stimulated. I'm really screwing up my brain to where it's hard to just like sit and be still, and because my brain is just like a hamster on a wheel. So what am I gonna do? Like, I want to tell you guys right now that I'm gonna block for 24 hours. Do I want to do this right now? Maybe I'm gonna do it Saturday though. Man, I don't know, folks. Oh God, maybe I'll do it. Oh Lord, guys, I don't even want to do it. This is so ridiculous that I won't just do it for 24 hours. Can anybody relate? Can anybody have any success with kicking these games, man? Because lordy. Okay. I can't schedule it. So I'm not going to do it now because I want to play tonight. But before I go to bed, I will block it and I will do... Oh, should we do like 18 hours this time? I don't know. Ugh, God. I think I'll go with 15. 15 hours. Can you believe this, folks? Can you believe this, folks? So yeah, I'm trying to have compassion with myself. And I do. I don't beat the shit out of myself horribly, but I do some. So if you are a fellow Candy Crush addict or games on phones, hit a gal up if you've had some success in dealing with this shit. So, I mean, it's as simple as just permanently making it so that I can't touch them at all. Part of it is like dissociation, and I understand that this is some part in me that is trying to protect me in some way. And then on top of that, you know, my brain is just fucked. Like, whoever designed Candy Crush, I think it's called King Games. King Games has totally fucked me up, folks. Can I sue them? Ugh, okay, that's enough out of me. Damn the Join Shit Show. Love you all. Almost forgot. Please give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, and give me a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Maybe that will help with my Candy Crush addiction, okay? More 5-star reviews. Love you all.
They say that I should damn the Join Shit Show. They say that that's where people go to heal. They say that I'll feel seen and heard, like I have never felt before. So I'm going to damn the Join right now.
Hey everyone, thanks for your shares. So I read this reading this morning And what I realized, I also wasn't directly criticized, but my mom had like the flip side of the critical parent, where she criticized and judged everyone constantly. So no matter what we went, what occasion, what restaurant, what family event, no matter how great, beautiful, fantastic it was, there was just the running commentary. Oh, did you see what this one was wearing? Did you see their hair? Or this dish was cold? Or I can't believe they ran out of that? Or it took so long to serve the second course. You know, running commentary. And like I grew up marinating in that environment, just like you learn language and your, you know, cultural activities. I just learned to criticize, and I've really made a lot of headway. But my point is, when you notice that someone criticizes everything and everyone, you know you're also on that list. So you make up, you know, you're always like guarding against being criticized. And you know that when you're not around, they're criticizing you. So even if it wasn't said to my face, it was like, well, of course I'm being criticized. And even as an adult, sometimes my mom does a cruise that stops in San Francisco, and I meet her and her travel companion. I pick them up at the port. We spend the day together. And if something doesn't go right, I'm always apologizing. I live down the peninsula, so I haven't lived in San Francisco for a while, but I remember when I used to live in San Francisco, there was a restaurant right on the beach that I really liked, and I took them for lunch, but it was 10 years ago since I was there. And it was this really windy day, and the windows were like screeching from the wind off the ocean. And I just like, you know, I just kept hearing like, oh my God, she's going to criticize. And I was like apologizing and apologizing over something that I had no idea, no control over. But I think that that's where a lot of my criticism comes from, without being able to pinpoint that my mom or my parents called me anything. It was just guarding against the continuous narrative onslaught that was everything. So thank you.
I just wanted to share my thoughts on the reading, and somewhat similar to what Leslie said. My parents didn't really outwardly criticize me. They criticized, and they still do, criticized everybody else, from someone in a store, someone they saw on the street from the car, someone they saw on TV, whether it was how long they took to serve a meal, to their looks, their weight, the way they dress, the color of their skin. If my dad didn't comment on other people, I don't know that he would have anything to say. And even to this day, watching TV with him, I can't watch TV with him because he has to comment on everything about other people. And as an adult, I know that that has more to do with them than anything, and how they feel about themselves. And I also know they are always worried about what other people might think, you know, like the front of their house and the inside of their house is always pristine. And that has nothing to do with how happy it makes them. It's like, what would people think if they saw this mess, you know? And I remember being like, I'm kind of in the middle of the clutter situation. Like, I don't mind my own clutter, because I know, probably due to my ADHD, like it kind of will like pile up, but then I'll let go and sort it and clean it. It's not a big deal. Other people's drives me crazy, and a little bit of it is because I wonder subconsciously, I think, like, what would other people think? Like, we don't really have people over at our house, and it's not because I'm like, oh my God, they're gonna think my house is so messy. It's more like, oh, they're gonna realize I don't care that my house is messy and cluttered. So anyway, the self-critical thing, I think it's kind of done a couple things to me, where I'll criticize people in my head and like catch myself doing it and being like, what are you even talking about? But most of the time, I'm really aware of not critiquing or criticizing other people and trying to assume they're doing their best. But I'm constantly feeling like I'm being perceived all the time, even when no one is in the room and it's exhausting. I love this group, and being here and sharing and listening has been more helpful to me than any therapy I've ever had in my entire life. But that doesn't change the fact that every time I'm done speaking, I'm like, oh my God, did that make any sense? Oh my God, nobody related to me. Oh my God, Andrea probably just wishes I would shut up. It's just like every time. And today I'll be like, God, that was so dumb. What? Why did I share that? How to get rid of it. But even now, my mom doesn't criticize me, but she'll criticize other people, and I'll get off the phone with her and I'll feel like somehow I'm a loser. Like somehow, probably because she hangs up the phone. And Leslie, like you were saying, like when I'm not there, they're probably talking shit about me too. So anyway. Yeah. See, now I'm like, what did I just say? Is that okay? Okay. I'm done. Thanks.
Well, three things about the clutter, right? I think I have the opposite problem. Like sometimes I think I organize too much, like as a way of distracting myself from maybe doing something I enjoy, but I think I might be over organized. And I'd love to take shit to the Salvation Army and to the thrift store. I always have a bag at my door with stuff ready to go. And I just feel light when send stuff out. So there's that. About this critical parent, I have a real hard time identifying, like finding thoughts that I have where I'm beating myself up. Either they're really elusive, like mice, and they just scurry around. And when I go to find them, they just, you know, they scurry off. Or the criticism was so cloaked and covert that I can't grab onto it. I mean, I know it was there because I'm brutal on myself, but I don't know how. Like, I hear clients, you know, people say, yeah, my clients too, you know, they have thoughts like, you know, oh, I'm so stupid. And they would say like, you know, my mother used to always tell me, you're so stupid. And I just don't have that. But I know there was a lot of criticism there. And I think a lot of it was in the silent stares. Maybe it wasn't what she said. It was what she didn't say. I don't know, but I know I'm a perfectionist, and I try to do the self-compassion to offset it. If I try to attack it, you know, head on, like, you know, Kelly, just go fuck up. You know, it just doesn't work, right? I don't know. I can't seem to, I'm always trying to find it, you know, like I'm always looking for some kind of evidence that, you know, oh, there it is. There's a memory of her saying something, but I just can't seem to find it. I don't know. I don't know what that's about, but kind of bothers me. Anyway, so thank you.
This podcast lines up with me falling into compulsion because I'm feeling out of control, given what I talked about before we started recording. And tomorrow is the day that the city is going to do a pickup of anything you leave on the curb. So I am a lot like Kelly in that I tend to do like a seasonal clear out. And we downsized when we moved here. But what's coming up, what other people are sharing that's really come to me is how I respect my husband's style, and I've come to respect my kids' styles of how they keep their spaces, and that's sacred to them, and to not fuck with it. I remember coming home from time at my dad's house and the toy box and all of my toys were gone because you never played with them anyway. Well, how would you know? You're never home. I'm a latchkey kid. What do you mean? I just clean them up and you think I'm not playing with them because if I don't clean them up, that's my ass. So I try to be very mindful of that. At the same time, I have a child who really loves stuffies and has a horrible dust allergy. So what you gonna do? And the critical parent piece is directly linked, or used to be. It's not now. I can catch that her so beautifully now whenever I clean anything, because on my spiritual journey, cleaning has become a spiritual practice. So it doesn't happen very often, but it may happen now because of what I'm feeling out of control about. And it's 1,000,000% my mom. And it's how ungrateful people are by not putting their things away. Who do they think I am, their maid? And didn't I treat you better? And why is this here? Don't you know it belongs there? And why are you so fucking disorganized? No wonder you can never find your phone or your keys. And there's no such thing as ADHD. It means go outside and play. And oh. And the memory of that, I feel it right in my heart. You know, that the song that always comes to mind with my relationship with my mom is that Eminem song of Headlights, where it's like, it's not my fault he's gone. You know, well, you know, I don't, if everything's so great, why is everything so fucked up? And so I have learned to keep my things tidy because my organizational style is, if it's not in its certain spot, I have to actually say, I am conspicuously placing my keys on this counter and put it down. You know, otherwise it's going to take me half an hour to find them again, even though the house is clean. That's hello. My neurospice is very picante. So, The intertwine of the self-critic and the cleaning or the not cleaning, the resting versus the overdrive. When I was drinking, cleaning the house was one of my favorite things to do while drunk, because it was like, I can play and be trashed and be clean too. And I was like, holy crap, that's exactly what my mom did. So I'm kind of all over, but I am... That's what I got. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I got an email from my ex-wife that she's planning on moving 2.5 hours away with my kids. You know, that was hard to hear. How I reacted to it, I'm still trying to process, because I didn't spiral out of control, and I didn't... And I was waiting for that, you know, anxiety to take over and things to go even worse. But it didn't happen. And I realized that all the work that I've been doing is starting to work, and that I was mentally capable of handling this. My body, on the other hand, was freaking out. So I have more work to do there. And I have, you know, there's been some other people in my life going through some big events and trying to be there for them. And just like the way I feel right now, I've never felt before. And like, I feel in control. Things still trigger me. You know, I still have anxiety, but it never takes control. I've been able to go off medication that I've been on, and it's amazing how, you know, I haven't been on here in 5 weeks, and the first person that talked, Claire, like how she's talking about something that I'm feeling is that, you know, she kind of feels like she has a win, right, finally. And you know, I feel that. Thank you for listening, everybody.
So I would say I completely relate. That's exactly how my mom is, incredibly judgmental and critical, and just like always has something kind of like nasty to say just about whatever it is. And it could, you know, usually it is more like appearance related, but it could be anything. And I do think, you know, it took me, I always kind of like knew that my mom is like kind of like snobby, but like in the opposite way. Like, she was snobby, but at the same time, like, it was like she was too good for everyone, but like it was because like those people like had too much money or something, you know. It just didn't make any sense. And I feel like I just, you know, that's how she felt about all of my friends' parents when I was growing up. And like, you know, she wasn't friends with any of them. And like, it just took me really actually not that long to realize that this was like her problem and her being insecure about it. And that's why she's so nasty. But it's funny because I just didn't really realize how much people, like, that other people noticed, because I guess I'm just so used to it. And the other probably like a few months ago, my really good friend, who's my ex-boyfriend, but so he knows my family really well. And he said to me, I'm just like, your mom is just so nasty. And I just was like shocked. Like, I still think about it all the time. I'm like, wow, I just can't believe he noticed. Cause like, it's not like she's ever saying like rude, you know, mean things to you. Like, oh, you're ugly, or you can't, you know, she's very on the surface nice. But I was like, wow, even you noticed that. And like, it just really is something that I feel like the same way. I think you said, Katie, like on, like I'm always being watched or something, even when nobody's around. And it's totally about like image. And also the thing about like, you know, keeping the house clean or something. It's funny because like my mom was clean. We had a cleaning lady and she kept the house clean. So it's never a thing. But something that reminds me of is like, you know, the towels that were like in my parents' bathroom in the back, they would never buy new towels. You know, my dad wouldn't think about that, but my mom would just have the like rattiest old towels. Well, nobody will ever see this. Or like, you know, oh, well, I just wear this ugly like t-shirt to bed because nobody will ever see this. And like, that's something that's really taken me like a while to realize, like, that's like not loving yourself, right? Like, that's like, you should feel good in your towels for yourself. Why do you want to like use some crappy towels just because you care about, like, you know, put them up in the front bathroom where people see them? That just, it's so ridiculous to me. But I feel like that, I don't know, it's just like all these things are, they are so like interrelated. And like, you know, the clutter thing, it's like related to the image thing, it's related to the criticism. And like, it's just, it's amazing how many people are apparently living the same life as me, or were very similar. So thanks everyone.
Hey everybody. Yeah, on the topic of criticism, I've been really processing some of the criticism I received growing up lately. Because I grew up in a really like unstable, dysfunctional family, and everyone was always angry and always looking for a scapegoat. I was the scapegoat, and I got like just the brunt of all this anger and criticism, and about my weight and about like, you know, just all kinds of stuff. But I think the thing that really hit me hard recently was like, I remember when I lived with my uncle for a little bit, it was like a year, my family was moving around a lot, and I was feeling very unmoored and like kind of left alone and unwanted at their house. And he said something like truly horrific to me, and I was like 11, and I can't even say it like out loud right now. It's like, it's just too horrible to say, but it like recently just hit me. And, you know, it's been like 20 years and he's dead, and I haven't spoken to him since I was a kid, but I wanted to punch a hole through the wall the other day. I was so angry thinking about it, I can't imagine saying anything remotely like that to a kid, and especially an orphan. Like, my mom died when I was little and my dad was out of the picture. And I just, it boggles my mind that somebody would say that. And it's really hard to have self-esteem when you're getting it from like all sides. I was getting it at home, I was getting it at school. And then because I was in a Pentecostal church, like a fundamentalist church, I was also like getting the message that like gay people are going to hell and gay people are going to burn. And so it was like the walls were closing in as a kid, and all I wanted was someone to like me. And it's a lot to process. And the good news is like, I am processing it and like getting it out. And the past couple of years, I've really had some like stable adult perspective on it. And that's helped a lot, because I'm out of the fog of thinking this was normal, that it was my fault or all of that. So yeah, thanks for all your shares.
I lowered my hand because everybody said everything. First of all, welcome back, Andrea's voice. Thank you, everyone, for your shares. You all said every single thing, from the fact that
I had a narcissistic parent whose words will play over in my head for the rest of my life. But the more I try to do the work of ACA, the more I realize that most of my self-worth is wrapped up in the inaction of the other parent whose choice to keep the peace for himself said everything I ever needed to know about what I was worth and how the price of my suffering was an acceptable one to pay for a little bit of peace at night instead of standing up for some kind of what is right. And I find myself all these years later in some mess of accepting people treating me the way that he always did, and myself treating me the way that she always did. And then adding on, the more we try to educate ourselves through this healing journey and getting the things like, you know, ADHD is not a real thing and just get up and do the thing when every moment you're failing at least two things, because at any given moment there's at least a dozen that need to be done right now, and in every single moment just choosing one of them is committing to failing at the other 11. And the blessing of infertility and cancer and difficult circumstances has been that I didn't have to see. I could delude myself into thinking that just knowing what not to do would have made me like a better kind of parent and guardian, and just knowing what not to do was gonna feel a lot like knowing what to do. And it turns out my sister is a whole lot like my mother, and that led to my teenage nephew living here with me. And I get to see the dark humor of the universe represented in the ways that I see myself having way too much in common with my mother when it comes to trying to find a way through not knowing which of a dozen things to pick up first, and how that leads to the suffering of my nephew, along with the failing at my job and the trying to find which way is up in the very potential ending of my marriage. And all of that makes today's reading very, very appropriate for me, not just with the clutter and the struggling to even shower in between all the other stuff you're just paralyzed staring at, but then in the critical parent. And what I struggle with the most, I think, with internalizing today's reading is that we're supposed to be getting the message of like when to recognize that our inner critical parent is speaking. But I don't get into a space where I think my inner critical parent is definitely in charge and they're wrong. I can be well aware that my inner critical parent is my narrator right now, but I don't disagree with any of it. And I don't know how to get to the next step from there. But for now, I really appreciate everyone's share. And earlier on, I was planning on having a little tidbit of, I relate to this, I relate to this, I relate to this. But now that list would just be way too long, because like we're all saying in the chat, we all have the same inner monologue. And I too, Katie, absolutely lose my mind. And I'm fairly sure I didn't even say anything that was an actual real word. followed by whoever shares something profound right after me. I'm so dissociated right after sharing, let alone in the big group, that I have no idea what the person next to me said. And I was really hoping that Sandra would come on after me and you'd all forget that I had spoken at all.